Hello, Tea Crew, and welcome to this brand new episode of Tea Talk with Sha. Today, we're going to be getting into all the trending topics all over social media and the internet, and we're also going to be doing a deep dive into the J-Lo hate train. What is going on with Jennifer Lopez? We're going to get into everything. You're not going to want to miss this episode. Stay tuned. All right, Tea Crew, as per usual, the tea is brewing, especially this weekend. There was so much this week and weekend that was going on. I tried to pick the hottest topics. Hopefully, I did that. So let's get into it. So the first one here, Aoki Simmons is dating a 65-year-old man, and he is a restaurateur. He's known around the industry for his several restaurants, and he's worth $500 million. Okay. He is rich, rich. And it's so funny because, you know, earlier last year we saw, Aoki, her sister Ming, and Kimora Lee kind of come after Russell Simmons after a variety of posts were made on Mother's Day, I believe. And they kind of just like aired the situation out that he has not been a present father, that, you know, when he got these charges or allegations against him, he fled to Bali. He hasn't been present in their life. He hasn't been calling them. He hasn't been checking on them. And when they were on better terms, I believe it was Russell who leaked a call between his daughter and himself where she said that if he didn't step it up on her monthly support, that she was going to get a sugar daddy. And Russell started laughing and he's like, oh, you're all talk. You're not going to do that or whatever. Well, fast forward almost exactly a year later and all these photos start popping up of, you know, Aoki and this older man on the beach in St. Barts. And then they find him that he is Safi, last name Safi, this restaurateur. And that, you know, they're carrying on a relationship. So she proceeds to go live in St. Barts. She's talking about all the stuff that he's purchased for her, and how they're having this great time and the designers that she likes. And she just keeps calling her my boyfriend, my boyfriend, my boyfriend. Like she's super excited to be with this older man. And I just thought to myself, oh my God, the cycle continues. Because during the call out phase last year, you know, Kimora talks about how young she was when she met Russell, how she was modeling, but she was 16, she was in high school, and he would come pick her up at school and all these like really, really wild things that were, I guess, allowed to happen at the time. And how they just would not fly today. And I will say Aoki is of age. She is 21 years old. So she is not a minor. But it is just giving like, girl, it's definitely giving rich sugar daddy vibes. And I joked in my comments when I posted this on our Instagram page, Tea Talk with Sha, on all platforms. I posted that, you know, maybe because she's kind of dating older men and she kind of sees it for herself, she can understand why her mom was also interested in an older man and her dad who wasn't. I think the age gap between her and her boyfriend is much greater than the age gap between Kimora and Russell, because I believe Russell was in his late 20s and when Kimora was 16, doesn't make it right. But I'm just saying, I think the age gap was less between her parents than even her and her own boyfriend. So it's like, I don't know. I feel like she's just getting to the bag right now, and that it's nothing serious. She's a very smart girl. You know, she's in Harvard or just graduated Harvard. She knows what she's doing. And she's an adult. So just kind of is what it is. A little shocking, but it is what it is. All right, let's get into this next topic here. So I watched the Stormy Daniels documentary on Peacock. And I let you guys know that I was watching it at some point last week. And I asked you if you wanted like a review of this. A couple of you said yes. So I was like, instead of making a mini sip, I'll throw it into this episode. So let's get into some of the things I found. So firstly, I found that for someone who coined the phrase fake news, Trump dumps a lot of it, right? As soon as Stormy's story was going to come out, Basically, long story short, Trump flipped on his lawyer, Cohen. For those that remember this time frame, this was the personal lawyer of Trump. So because he was getting to so many scandals, even as a sitting president, he had a or as a person running for president at that time, he had a lawyer who was like a fixer, and that was doing all his problem solving for him. And this was Cohen. So when the story came brewing, bubbling to the surface that Stormy, that is an adult film star, was going to tell her SA story about, the president, the running president at the time, that she would get compensated so she wouldn't tell her story, right? Because it was bubbling up. And they thought, let's just pay her and get her out of the way. Well, the money could not come from contribution funds because that's illegal. So he basically told his personal lawyer, like, find the money and pay her. So his personal lawyer then, mortgaged his house, like remortgaged his house or something like that, ended up finding a way to get the money and paid Stormy off with this money. So then he ends up going to jail for a little bit because of these actions, and Trump just like threw him under the bus. That's basically what happened in that case. But what really stood out to me was A, the misinformation that we got from the media, right? It was just like we thought that they had a consensual relationship, but that this adult film star was now coming up to make Trump look bad because he was running for president, right? When in actuality, what it seems like from what Stormy is saying and just kind of piecing the rest of the stories together from other women and other things that have happened is that she didn't want to come forward. She was happy. She was married. She was producing her own films. She was directing in her own films. She was starting her own adult film company. And she was segueing into a different phase of her career where she, didn't have to show herself on film, and she was more behind the camera in mommy mode, in wife mode, the whole bit, right? And what happened was this whole story came and just disrupted her life to the point where she wasn't able to do what she was doing before. So she decided to capitalize on being the adult film star who was quote unquote dating Donald Trump, when in actuality, the story that they didn't want to come out is that he had assaulted her, right? So it was just sad to see her lose her closeness with her daughter at one point and her marriage, because of the different details that were coming out between their relationship and the case and the whole thing. Then she lost the case to Donald Trump, and then she had to pay for his lawyer fees, and that basically bankrupted her. And then she had her lawyer, who was trying to become famous off of the case, he stole from her, and then he went to jail. It was a really, really interesting documentary, but I do feel bad for Stormy overall. And it was just interesting because, Stormy is a Republican. Those are her values. That's, what she believes in. But she also thought, like, I'm not gonna let somebody else tell my story and profit off my story. I'm gonna be the one to tell my story and to profit off it. So she kind of became like this liberal leader because she went against Trump, but she actually is a Republican, which is kind of funny, and ironic in itself. But it also just showed how like victims of these kind of assaults, they get slut shamed, they get victimized, they get like portrayed terribly. All their information is revealed, and it really shows how they shame the victims and how their current relationships suffer. Outside of the documentary, we were just watching Law and Order, and there was a case that came up, and the woman testified. She was, ard, and she testified against the person that did it to her and stuff like that. They shamed her. She had to give details. And it ended up causing her to lose her relationship. And she's like, I'm glad this person is going to be on the SO list. They're going to jail. But my life is now forever changed from having to explain everything that happened to me in open court. And I just think that people don't realize how damning that is to get up there, first of all, to be assaulted in the first place, but then have to get up there and share the details of your assault in open court and testify just to get some type of justice and have every single detail be, everybody's salacious gossip. as they're talking about something that happened to you and something that's super private. And it's just like, that don't make sense to me. You know what I mean? I feel like for SO assaults, they should let them, just tell the judge or just tell the judge and the prosecutor. Like, I don't think that's something that should have to be revealed in open court, and that the victim should then have to relive everything, every single thing that's happened to them. I think that is so just, it's not fair to the victims, you know? It is not fair to the victims at all that they have to go through that in order to get justice. So shout out to Stormy for telling her story, telling what really happened to her. And just, the whole entire family. And I was happy to see at the end of the documentary, that her and her ex-husband are on better terms, and that they're raising their daughter, they're co-parenting, their daughter in what looks like a healthy way. So at least she was able to kind of salvage that from the whole situation. All right, let's get into something a little lighter. The JT versus GloRilla beef. So let's start from the beginning. GloRilla puts out her new EP, and she did a rollout for this EP. She was on Shannon Sharp, she was on Tamron Hall, and I think a couple others. So she did a little media press tour talking about, being in her own head and then finally putting out Yeah Glow, having success with it, and then realizing that she has to trust herself, right? So in this song, she's detailing how she would just love the rap girls to come together. She talks about if Cardi B and Nicki would have a song together, it would be like a number one. And then she talks about how like she's not beefing with JT, but they're not cool or something like that. No, she said, they're not like fr she said something like they're not like friendly, but they're not beefing, at the same time. Like they just kind of have like, a whatever, with each other. Well, JT didn't appreciate being mentioned at all, and she started going off on GloRilla, and on Twitter. So basically, it has been alleged that there was a little scuffle between GloRilla and JT at the VMAs, and in Yeah Glow, GloRilla says that she's slapping rappers and stuff like that. And so she kind of ran with the rumor that she slapped JT, when in actuality, she threw her purse at JT and allegedly it hit her in the face, right? So she was like, basically, whether I slapped you or hit you in the face, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you in the song, but you blew it up because you mentioned it or whatever. So they go back and forth, trading insults. Who cares? People have done videos. If you want, just type in JT versus Gorilla or vice versa, and you can get all the different things that they tweeted at each other. It got pretty nasty at some point. And I'm trying to come to this with an unbiased lens, because y'all know how I get down. If you listen to the podcast, you pretty much know whose side I'm on. But at the end of the day, I will say both of them traded insults. Both of them were quick-witted insults, but it was just weird, in my opinion, because you guys are coming from my opinion, it was weird for JT to come after GloRilla's poverty, right? GloRilla talks about being raised in a home where she only slept on air mattresses till she was 15. All five of her female siblings shared that air mattress with her, and then her brothers and the male siblings shared another air mattress, and then she said her oldest two brothers were living in the attic. So it's just like, to kind of bring that up, I know, and I get it, I get it, I get it. When you're going back and forth with a girl and y'all pulling hair and scratching weaves and clawing out virtually, there's no end point. But it's just weird as a person who doesn't come from much herself. JT went to prison, unfortunately, for scamming, trying to get money. And when the City Girls did their initial document, their documentary to introduce themselves to us, they talked about how they were trying to get money. They talked about how they were trying to change their circumstances. Carisha's mom was in prison, and JT was struggling to keep herself afloat. Carisha had a child at a young age. So it's like, you've experienced this firsthand. Like, why are you now like making a joke of it or trying to use it against her? Like, I don't know. I just would have preferred if they kept it more rap or, little silly things like physical appearance and stuff like that. I don't know. And then the misgendering. I never like when people misgender other people. Like, you have a boy body, and it's like, girl, you, I don't even want to go there, but it's like, When you pay for enhancements for your body, it's obviously for a reason, right? So it's like to call her a boy body and all this stuff. It's like, are you projecting how you used to feel about your body onto this woman? You know what I mean? And it's just like everybody doesn't want to look the same, and everybody's like walking in their own womanhood and what feels good to you, what feels comfortable. So I don't know. It's just like, and I get it. The gloves are off when you have a battle, the gloves are off and everybody wants to take little jabs, but it just seemed weird that she was coming after her poverty. Like she was born rich, you know, it's like, girl, you wasn't born rich. Why are you coming after this girl's, you know, her circumstances and what she grew up in? I just don't understand. Like, it just didn't make sense to me, but whatever. The ladies end up calling a truce, all the tweets were deleted, and we just like moved on from there. I will say, just to be fair, Glorilla did throw a little petty shade in when she was getting ready on live earlier today, and she was covering her chest and she was like, I don't want to have a nip slip like JT. I was like, now let's end it. Y'all said y'all ended it. Let it go. Let's end it. Let's cut it. I don't want to hear no other tweets. I don't want to see no other mentions of each other. Oh, and I even almost forgot to say, this boiled over into Akbar. So, you know, every time something comes up, Akbar got to insert herself into the situation. And then when Glorilla's friend saw that Akbar had inserted herself, she started inserting herself. She's like, you know, I was going to stay out of it, but since Akbar wants to hop into it, let me hop into it. So now they're having like some little like sideline undercard beef. And I'm just like, Lord, I can't, like, let's just cut it. Let's just cut it off right here. This is just team too much. But entertaining nonetheless, the girls can read. I will say that both JT and Glorilla were reading down. But again, I just didn't like the whole poverty thing, the whole circumstances thing. It's like, that's completely out of her control. And it's honestly, to me, it's just not funny. Like, I don't know, maybe some people might find it to be funny, but I don't think poverty is funny. Just me. All right, let's get into this next topic here. J. Cole fires back at Kendrick. And Drake is still waiting for his writers to come back from spring break so he can respond. Woo! I had a couple men mad in my comments about me talking about this Metro Boomin, Drake, Future beef. And now I'm about to talk about some more rap beef. And if you don't like it, you don't have to. That's fine, honey. Just scroll. Okay. And if you're sensitive, skip to the next topic. For the Drake lovers, for the Drake D-riders, you might want to skip the next 30 seconds to a minute because I don't care about y'all feelings. Anyway, you know, J. Cole fires back in a surprise project that he dropped on Friday, Might Delete Later, where he goes in on Kendrick. He talks about his albums, how some of them hit, how some of them didn't, and how, you know, he really thinks of himself as number one when he's had projects that didn't land. I don't know. You know, Joe Budden commented on this and he said, you know, he didn't think that Cole really came back at Kendrick as a diss because it was just too nice. But I think they just have a mutual respect between Cole and Kendrick where it's just about lyricism. It's just about rap. It's just about something being behind the rap. It's not just about flows. It's about being a bop, but at the same time, really being lethal. And I think they have a mutual respect for each other that they would not hit below the belt. Now, I don't know if that respect extends to Drake or not, but I think between Cole and Kendrick, it definitely, there's something there that they would not hit below the belt and possibly may work together soon or in the future. You know what I mean? They'll always kind of have that camaraderie between them because they are both very talented. And I appreciate that. There's nothing wrong with doing a diss and having it, you know, stay in the music. That's actually what the fans would prefer. I mean, we got a hot track from Kendrick. We got two projects from Metro Boomin and Future. So they did We Don't Trust You, and then we did We Still Don't Trust You 2 weeks later. And then we get the Drake Cole project. And it's just like, wow, for people that really like rap, this is your time. You have tons of material. So I think the fans are really enjoying that. You know, somebody made the joke that, you know, Drake can't respond because his writers are on spring break. And I laughed so hard. I had to put that in there in the intro of this topic. But it's the that's the thing, right? He's on tour. He could just drop a freestyle. He could drop a project even because he's on tour. And being on tour, it would push it, but he's not going to do it because that's not the kind of artist that he is. Period. He won't respond because he can't respond. I think some of it's not clicking in y'all's brain what kind of rapper Drake is. He's a commercial rapper. 10 people write his songs and he comes on and performs them from a reference track. He's not a battle rapper, y'all. It is what it is. Everything else that he's done aside to black women, all his crazy, weird, extra manipulative, deceptive behavior, put that all aside and just put him in the rap category. He's a performer. I wouldn't even say he's a rapper at this point. He's just copying the reference track. We're going to get into that in the deep dive about reference tracks. But he's copying the reference track. Like, he's not really bringing anything into the song. He's doing what he's told, and then he gets up and regurgitates it. This is Aubrey. Like, I can't. All right, that's all I gotta really say on that. Shout out to Cole. Shout out to Kendrick. Let's keep this in the music. Let's keep this beef going. You know what I'm saying? For the rap fans that want to hear it. For the girlies who need something to play at the gym, like myself. And I like to get into a little playlist. I like to hear little rap jabs while I'm working on the stair stepper. You know what I'm saying? All right, let's get. Congratulations are due to the South Carolina Gamecocks. They have won the National Women's Basketball Collegiate Tournament with Dawn Stanley as their coach. And she just knocked it out the park. This is her third win. This is the most wins for a black coach, a black female coach. And she is just killing it. You know, I am just so proud of all the women of collegiate basketball right now. It is just a powerhouse. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Dinashe, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, from the Gamecocks, and just all of these women that are really, I mean, the viewership is more than the men at this point. They are pulling in eyeballs, they are pulling in young fans, they're making people notice women's basketball for real, for real. And I'm excited to see a lot of them enter the WNBA draft. I'm hoping that this generation of publicity will get them a little bit higher salaries than what they've known. This is the thing, right? And I can appreciate that. You have to have money in a sport to get advertisers, and advertisers pay these big salaries. But the minimum salary in men's basketball is 1.1 million for a starter. 1.1 million. And a lot of these women are barely clearing like 200,000 to 300,000. The disparity is insane. And with the popularity rising, I hope that more sponsors will, you know, pour into the WNBA. I mean, they have the stadiums, they have the players. It's not rinky dink. When you watch WNBA, it looks super professional. Like, you have to kind of zoom in on it to see, oh, is this men's or women's? Like, they're getting there. It has built itself up over time, and it's really becoming a powerhouse in the league itself. And I just want to see the sponsors now see this and step up and raise, you know, help to raise these salaries so these women don't have to go overseas and deal with the whole Brittany Griner of it all. Like, you should be able to play in the US, take the off season as the off season, and then come back and play in the US again. You should be making enough money to be able to stay in your home country and play your sport. This is one of the richest countries in the world. There's no reason why people should have to go overseas on the off season to make enough money to live. Like, can we keep it a bean? There's no reason why. So get that together. And I personally will be watching more because I do enjoy it, but I don't always watch basketball like that. But I personally will be watching the WNBA more, you know, to support them and to support the sport because I really am interested. So I'm gonna make it more of a point to watch it more. So, you know, get the help do my little part that I can to get the viewership up and to talk about it more in the podcast and such too to promote it because these women are incredible. It's like insane how incredible they are. All right, and let's lead into the last topic here. Beyonce scores a number one album officially with Cowboy Carter. Now, we all knew this when Cowboy Carter came out because it was just amazing. You guys heard my review in the last episode, so I won't go into it again, but I love, love, loved the album. And it just opened so many doors, like so many streams. I think they said over 300 million streams in the first week, and then 168 in pure sales. So they combined the number of streams and pure sales to be 407,000 sales total. It's like 100,000 sales total, and that is incredible. It's the highest release of 2024. It beat out Ariana Grande, it beat out Metro Boomin and Future, it beat out everything. It just Cowboy Carter on top. And well deserved. I think it's a well thought out project. And you know, I love to listen to the podcast The Read. Shout out to Crystal and Kid Fury whenever Beyonce drops something, because I know they're gonna break it down to the terms that I need it to be broken down to. And they spoke about how much money she put into this album, how much money she puts into the craft, how much money she puts into her producers and the, you know, she writes, but she also has writing teams and like the whole bit. And it's just like, yeah, Beyonce puts a lot into her music. Her music is not fly by night. Her music is not just put a couple records together. It's so cohesive. It's so thought out. Like, I'm still listening to the album and hearing new things like 2.5 weeks later. And it's pretty much all I listen to. So it's like, how am I hearing new things? How could I not have heard everything? You know, but it's like, no, there's no kind of, and just the ode that she paid to these Black country artists who have been toiling, 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 and not getting any type of recognition or respect. Because, you know, white people have dominated country for a very long time, even though originally it was Black music. It was, you know, we laid off of it, we stepped away from it. And it has just been dominated. Now it's like being reclaimed. And I love it. It's like that Maxine Walters historic line, reclaiming my time. We're reclaiming our music. We're reclaiming it. And not to say we want to push everybody else out, but it's just like for now, maybe. My evil laugh. Maybe. No, but shout out to Beyonce. Like, wow. We stan a queen, because she has just found a way to just tap in. Truly tap in. I mean, the music sounds so new and like so cutting edge. 42 years old, like always has her finger on the pulse of what's going on. It's incredible. Like it truly is incredible when you think about it. It's just insane. It's insanity, Beyonce. And you gag us every time. And then if that wasn't enough, she gonna drop the Pony remix on the weekend. I was playing that all weekend. I was just like, wait, woke up this morning. I was like, dang, Beyonce, rip my edges out again. Take my edges and just rip them from my scalp again. I'm gonna have to get those little tattooed edges after a while. I'm gonna have to get those little edges that you put on like a little temporary tattoo, because Beyonce keeps reaching down and grabbing my edges at the follicle and just pulling them straight out. All right, this has been the trending topics. Stay tuned for our sports report.
Hello, hello, hello out there, and welcome to the sports update with J Rob. Today I'll be covering both the NBA and the NFL. Let's get started with NBA news. In NBA news, former NBA stars Vince Carter, Michael Cooper, and Chauncey Billups are going to be inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame class of 2024. Also in NBA news, New York Knicks forward Julius Randle will have season-ending shoulder surgery. And finally, in NBA news, Kobe Bryant's 2000 championship ring has been sold in auction for $927,200. This is the most ever for an NBA championship ring. Now let's move to NFL news. In NFL news, the Philadelphia Eagles have given left tackle Jordan Mailata a 3-year contract worth $66 million, 48 million dollars is guaranteed. Also, in NFL news, the Buffalo Bills have traded wide receiver Stephon Diggs, a 2024 sixth-round pick, and a 2025 fifth-round pick to the Houston Texans for a 2025 second-round pick. And finally, in NFL news, the Kansas City Chiefs have signed veteran quarterback Carson Wentz to a one-year contract. Carson Wentz will back up Patrick Mahomes. And this has been the Sports Update with J-Rob. Have an amazing week.
All right, T-Cruz, my favorite part of the podcast, we have come to the deep dive where I get to shine a light on something or talk about something that has been heavy on my mind this week. And you know, we are talking about Miss Jennifer Lopez from the block, or maybe not from the block, allegedly. So let's get right into it. So, you know, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, I did an episode, I believe it was in the end of season one or the beginning of season two, where I explored the fact that J-Lo possibly may be an opportunist, right? Mariah Carey released a lot of information about J-Lo in her memoir, and she basically talked about how J-Lo was poised to take her career and try to take the top spot as Sony's new female vocalist, but that J-Lo's voice just couldn't carry, and, you know, whatever Tommy Mottola was trying to do just did not work out, right? And she kind of left it there. She didn't really get into all the things of the thing. She talked about stolen music. She talked about, you know, missed opportunities that were given to J-Lo because Tommy was mad at Mariah for divorcing him and things like that. So we knew about that. But now we're coming into a whole nother round of people who are alleging things about J-Lo. And the J-Lo hate trade is very, very strong. So let's start at the beginning. And I know a lot of people are going to think it starts with her documentaries, but it actually goes further than that. So back a little bit further. So last year, J-Lo put out a documentary again, and this one was on Netflix. I don't know if a lot of you remember this. And in this documentary, she talks about how she felt as though she was a big enough star to not have to share the Super Bowl stage with Shakira, that she wanted to perform on her own, right? And this ruffled a lot of feathers because Shakira is an international superstar and she really added to the performance. And a lot of people were like, hey, wait, where's the sisterhood wanting to share the stage with another fellow successful Latina? And J-Lo made it clear that she wanted the stage all to herself. In the same documentary, she talks about not being praised by her peers, not receiving any awards for her acting or her singing. And at most, she would get like a People's Choice Award or a Nickelodeon Award. And she just feels like she never got those big awards. And her music was super popular, and she felt like she did a residency in Vegas. She toured all over the world. She had mega platinum hits. Why wasn't she getting this appreciation from her peers? So this is something that she talked about in the documentary, and it just was not received well. Now let's move into these new set of documentaries that she put out recently. So she did a short film called The Greatest Love Story Never Told. Okay, we'll get into that title. And then she put out This Is Me Now, which is a documentary about her making that short film and I guess her making her new album, right? So we all know Jennifer has spun the block and got back with her past love, Ben Affleck. Now, in the meantime, in between time, Jennifer was married 3 times. She had 2 beautiful children. Ben Affleck was married to Jennifer Garner, and he also had 2 kids. So now they have a blended family. So the documentary talks about the blended family, them being together now, you know, officially, hopefully forever, and how, you know, their love story kind of took place. But then she's saying it's the greatest love story never told because the short film is about her finding love within herself. And once she did that, then she ended up, you know, reconnecting with Ben Affleck. But it just didn't read that way. Like, it was just like the greatest love story never told, but you're telling it now. Like, what are you saying? Like, this doesn't even make any sense. A lot of the short film didn't really make sense. It wasn't cohesive. It was random celebrities all over the place. Then we see the documentary that she asked everybody and their mom to be in it. And everybody's just detaching herself, like separating themselves from this project because it's so weird, and they don't think it'll be worth their time or executed properly. And then we hear, you know, Ben Affleck kind of being like, not really wanting to take part in this documentary, wanting to keep their private life more private. Now they have a second chance at love and all these things. And he's just like, why are you making this so difficult for us to be together? Like, let's just be together. Like, we don't have to have this documentary crew in the house for 3 or 4 weeks. You know, we don't have to do this. Even if you decide to do this short film, we don't also have to do this documentary. And word on the curb is, you know, Amazon didn't really want to pay for it. So J-Lo poured a lot of her own money into this documentary and it wasn't perceived well. Then we get the viral clips of her shaking her hair in her personal gym. And she's talking about like, she loves how her hair looks like this. It reminds her of when she was a kid running wild on the streets of the Bronx. And people that knew her at that time then started to come forward and they were like, we went to an all-girls private school. It was mostly white. And there was no running wild on the streets. You got dropped back off at your house. You went up them little stairs and you went inside, honey. There was none of that running through the streets. We don't know what you're talking about. We don't know you. So that was pretty damning. And then J-Lo went and gave her goat deli order. And it was like a ham and cheese with an orange drink. And people were like, girl, who getting a ham and cheese? You're not getting no bacon. You ain't getting bacon, egg and cheese or whatever. And it did kind of come off like she didn't know what to say. So she just paused like she was reminiscing on the order when in actuality, she may not have been the kind of New Yorker that went to bodegas, you know, very frequently. Some New Yorkers don't. It just is what it is. I don't know. Just very awkward and weird. And then we start to get allegations about the music. So here enters Natasha Ramos. Now, Natasha Ramos is known in the industry for working with the Neptunes, working in, you know, songwriter camps and different things in the industry. She's been in the industry a very long time at this point. And she just does a story time about how her voice is the voice of Jenny from the Block. So basically, she wrote this song at 19 years old for Jennifer Lopez. So she wanted to clarify the song was not stolen from her. Her name is Natasha, right? And she's from Connecticut. So when she's saying, I'm from the Bronx, and she's saying all these things, she wrote this song for J-Lo, right? This is J-Lo's history. This is J-Lo's song that she wanted to sell to J-Lo, which is what she ultimately did. But there were some hiccups, right? So she made a reference track. And for those that don't know, the reference track or the DNA track is basically the person who is creating the demo. They will put vocals on the track so the artist can hear how the track will sound with their own vocal. And it kind of helps to sell the music because they're like, oh, you would sound so good on this. Listen to this vocal. Let's do it. And then, you know, you could use it as a reference when you re-record the song. Well, it comes out, you know, months later and the song is basically Jennifer has redone the verses, but she didn't redo the chorus. So the whole, like, from the Bronx, that's Natasha saying that. And it's Natasha's voice singing the entire chorus as well because J-Lo did not re-record it. Now, we don't know if it's because of time constraints. We don't know if it's just because she's, you know, did it a couple times and it didn't sound like the reference track. So they just turned down J-Lo's vocals and turned up the reference track vocals. But then you have to understand this becomes a feature and it is no longer a background vocal when you don't have J-Lo high in the chorus. You see what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with it. But when it comes to a point of credit, that's a feature. This person is now being featured on the song. So they should have a feature credit. They shouldn't just be featured as background vocals when they're doing the lead vocals on the song. That's my opinion, right? So now we go deeper into the project. So Natasha talks about how she worked on 4 other songs. In those songs, she does claim that she only did background vocals, only Jenny on the Block is she contending that she did lead vocals. So the project is wrapping up. She describes a terrible situation with iconic producer Corey Rooney, where she allegedly says that he forced himself on her and she declined his advances. And she thinks, you know, even as a 40-year-old, 20 years later, that if a 19-year-old Natasha would have given in to what Corey wanted, that she would have had a bigger career. They would have paid her more. She would have gotten more work with Sony, and possibly even more work with J-Lo specifically. But she just feels like she was pushed out of that situation completely because she did not give in to Corey's advances. This is what Natasha is saying. And I tend to believe her. She's very talented. She has a beautiful voice. She sang live a cappella on TikTok. She sounds just like the record, even 20 years later. And I have no reason to not believe every single thing that she's saying, including what happened to her between her and Corey. And, you know, the industry has just shown itself to be just such a nasty place, such a hard place for young adults, women and men, as we've seen with the whole Drake Bell situation. And it's just like, God forgive you if you have morals, right? If you go into a situation knowing that you're not willing to do whatever it takes for your dream, you know, and sacrifice yourself and your mental health and your ability to consent and all these things, if you don't sacrifice these things, you feel as though you're not going to make it. And it just broke my heart that 20 years later, this woman couldn't reflect on her time there and be like, yeah, when I was younger, I was a singer and I did this stuff and I work with J-Lo and I work with the Neptunes. No, it becomes, I was on my way to a budding career, but because I had integrity, it was cut short. And you just hate to see it, you know? And she went on to say, you know, I don't know if J-Lo knows that I only got paid $3,500 for working on all four of those songs and doing lead vocals on that one song. But she was in the room when they were making decisions about pay and stuff like that. They also dangled some type of TV show in Natasha's face saying that she could play the younger version of J-Lo when they did this TV show, because I believe she's about 14 years younger than J-Lo. So they kind of put out there that she'll be able to, she would have other opportunities, basically. So just, you know, take this little compensation now. This is what fits in the album budget, right? But we will hook you up later with more opportunities. And I feel like people get promised the world all the time. And even if she would have sacrificed herself, right, and her morals and everything that she stood for, sometimes they make these empty promises and they still don't fulfill them. So if you ever stumble upon this podcast, Natasha, I just want you to know you did the right thing. At the end of the day, you know, people that behave that way don't usually carry through with their promises anyway. And he wasn't going to make you a star. He was just going to continue to use you. So at least I know she says in her TikToks and stuff that she's working two or three jobs now to support her family and all that. At least you have your integrity. At least you can sleep well at night, you know, because a lot of people can't. I'm just going to put it out there. A lot of people did whatever to get when they did whatever to go along and get along. And now they can't even sleep at night. So at least you have your integrity, girl. At least you have that. And you know, what's for you won't miss you. Who's to say somebody who hears this now won't give you the opportunity of a lifetime? 40 years old is young. It's not old, baby. 40 to new 20. Get back in that studio. You know what I'm saying? You never know. You never know. But shout out to Natasha Ramos for sharing her story. What do you guys think about the J-Lo hate train? What do you think it was that turned people against J-Lo this time? Because she has been America's darling for a very long time. And people have liked her generally. So what do you think it is that turned them against her? Do you think it was the documentaries? Do you think she spoke out a bit too much about her life and the things that she has going on just turn people off? I would love to know what you guys think in the comments. This has been The Deep Dive. Please stay tuned for the outro comments. All right, T Crew, this is my least favorite part of the podcast where I have to say goodbye to you. I just want to thank you all for sharing, listening, doing everything that you do to grow this little community. We do have a giveaway that is coming up pretty soon. There is a reel talking about Portia and Simon and their housing situation with their divorce. And when it gets to 50K, I'm going to be giving away a gift card because that is what you guys said you wanted. So keep an eye out for that. The rules are going to be super simple. Basically, anyone who follows the account will be eligible, and I will just go through and give one of you, you know, supportive followers a gift card just to show my appreciation. So keep an eye out for that on the Tea Talk with Shot Instagram page. As always, convict the cops that killed Breonna Taylor. We won't stop until she gets the justice that she rightly deserves. Have a beautiful day or night wherever you are, and I love you for listening. Bye.